we begin our series on the Jewish home. It's a new semester. It's a new series. I want to ask you a very personal question, and if you don't feel comfortable answering it, don't. You don't have to answer. But I have a real question I want you to at least think about. There comes a time when every person dies. And then most people cease to be productive after they die. Most people. Most people, not everyone, most people.
Some people become more productive after they die.
Could be. And now the question is, what do you think your greatest contribution to the world will be after you die? Simple question. You're going to live here, you're going to die, and the world will move on. What is your greatest contribution to the world? What are you going to do? If you haven't, if you're comfortable sharing your answer, we want to hear. Yes. Having children. So if your children end up being Al Capone or... How do you guys know Al Capone is? That's before your time. Yes. Have kids, they'll have kids, they'll have kids, they'll have kids. That's the purpose of existence. Okay? Okay, I hear you. I hear you. So I'm no different than my pet dog. I'm saying he reproduces, I reproduce. I don't have a pet dog. But I'm saying, technically I'm just a sophisticated animal. I'm asking. The peacock spreads its wing, so the female puts on nice clothing. I'm asking one question. After you're 120, what do you think is the most important thing you will have contributed to this world? If you want to say it's actually producing offsprings, I'm not contesting that. You're entitled to say whatever you want. Okay. Yes, sir.
Mitzvot.
So you put on tefillin, you put on tefillin again, you put on tefillin again, you put on tefillin 300 times a year, right? Shabbos Yom Tov, you don't put on tefillin. You had mezuzah on your door. That's what the world gets from Elio, that Elio put on tefillin. I don't want to put down putting on tefillin. I'm just asking. Okay.
What am I? I'm another piece of a puzzle. So if that's Ratzon Hashem,
fine. Okay. Do we have any other answers? Yes, Yaakov. A very nice building, Trump Towers, until his son takes over and it becomes Kushner Towers. Yes. Okay.
This is my own perspective, because I grew up in a Christian community in the Philippines, but I'm not Christian ever since. I was raised by my father as a Jewish. Yeah. And then, of course, I want to transfer this faith to my children. That's why I'm here.
Okay.
This is my objective. So when I was passed away, I don't know when, but I make sure that this faith will be transferred to my children. And I continue as long as I can.
Okay, very nice. Gentlemen, do we have any more answers before we move on? I want to ask you another question, far less personal. Let's not talk about us. Let's talk about everyone else, okay? We're not talking about us. What is the greatest contribution the average person out there gives the world? So you could say kids. I'm not. You could say the same answer.
Carbon dioxide.
I'm saying what is the average person? So I think that the average person, the most meaningful thing they do is in the direction that Yisrael was talking about, is creating a home, and in the direction you were talking about, I would just add the values part of it. Meaning, I think that having kids without values, I'm not sure you did any good to the world. I think the most meaningful thing we do in life, for most people, the most meaningful thing they do is the home they build. The children, the education, the values, that's the most meaningful thing people do. So some people can take in orphans and raise them, and they've done a tremendous thing. Some people can save lives. They could work as doctors, or they could fundraise and save lives. There are different things people can do that have a lot of meaning. But the average person in his lifetime, usually the most meaningful, the thing that you invest the most time and hopefully what you've accomplished in life is your family. People sometimes think that the family has to wait, I'm doing my job. I don't know about that. You got to do your job. But remember, the job is there to service the family. The family is not there to service the job. A guy told me the other day, he said, I had an argument with my boss. And then I said to my boss, you know how much I've given the company? I'd kill myself for the company. He says, my kids are all dodo birds because I spent my life working to develop the company. How come you're not willing to work with me on the direction of the company? And I'm standing there looking at the guy, listening, did you just hear what you just said? The man says to me, he says, my kids are dodo birds. All my kids are a wreck because I've dedicated my life to the company. I said, huh, excuse me? And he's making this as a claim to his boss. You should listen to me when I speak to you about the direction the company should take. And I'm thinking, was that a good call? To sacrifice your kids for the company? Was that really a good call? So he works for a good company. I mean, they produce medical stuff. It's an important job what he does. It's not just, you know, he's not doing something pointless in his life. It is a very important company. There was a philosophy behind his dedicating his life to the company. It wasn't about money. But at the same time, you ask yourself, is that really the way we should be going? And our class tonight, our class on the Jewish home, in many ways is non-conventional, in the sense that we're not taking a specific book of Talmud or Halacha or Jewish thought or character development and saying, this is the way to go, and now you'll succeed. No, we're going to take from many different things, and we're going to try to work with practical concepts about how to build a good Jewish home. You don't have to buy anything I say. I try to explain what I'm saying and why. And this is not like any other class where I'm working off of tradition, where I'm saying, hey, this is what it says here, this is what it says there. No, this is a class on how to build a good relationship with your wives, with your kids, to develop a house of values. And that's something which there's no one formula for. Different homes work different ways, and it's legitimate. But we will try to tap into common pitfalls that people meet. We do have to recognize that our generation is having hardships that no one before us had. I'm not going to ask the question I've asked often in this class, which is, are there any students whose parents aren't divorced? Do we have two students, four students, six students? I'm not going to ask that question this year, but there are plenty of years where I ask the question, is there anyone here whose parents are not divorced? The ratio that's going on in the world and in the Jewish world as well is alarming. And it makes us realize that we need a class like this. We need to work on what are the tools we need in order to build a great relationship with our spouse. And it obviously is not so simple. People make the mistake of thinking that if you just get Mrs. Wright, it'll all work out. I got news for you. You will find Mrs. Wright. I bless all of you to find Mrs. Wright. And it's going to be hard, probably the hardest thing you do in your life. Because finding Mrs. Wright doesn't make it easy. Finding Mrs. Wright means I have who I'm going to work with, but that it's still the hardest thing you're going to do your whole life. If you want to make your marriage work, if you want to make it worthwhile, it involves investment. Marriage is the best thing in the world. The best thing. That's why Torah is compared to marriage, and our relationship with Hashem is compared to marriage. There is nothing sweeter in life than a good marriage. Well, you know what? If it's the best thing, then it's going to involve a lot of work. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. There are no freebies in this life. So you want it? We all want it. It involves investment. It involves taking control of ourselves and not only doing what I feel like it, because the natural course of a marriage is disastrous. The natural course of a marriage is you're going to yell at one another, you're going to be annoyed at one another, you're going to be frustrated with one another. It's not beautiful, it's not sweet. Oh, but it could be. It could be if we're willing to work on it. So we're going to begin our series on the Jewish home, new semester. I want to begin with the number one enemy of marriage. The number one challenge that everyone has after they get married or after they get engaged. And that is doubt. Doubt. The number one enemy of marriage is the thought, maybe I shouldn't have married her. Maybe I shouldn't be engaged to her. That's the number one problem you have in marriage. Okay? Everything else is secondary. Because after you get engaged, I used to teach chatanim in Merkaz Arab. So when a chatan would come over and tell me he got engaged, I'd say, Mazel Tov, and the guy would sit there beaming, and I'd say, do you regret it yet? And the guy would look at me in shock, and I'd say, well, if you didn't yet, you will. He's like, why are you telling me that? And I'd say, because otherwise, when it happens, a day after you got engaged, a minute after you got engaged, a week after you got engaged, a month after you got engaged, you start telling yourself, maybe I should break up with her. Why do I feel this way? But if you realize that everyone goes through this, then you realize you have to put mind over matter. Meaning everyone goes through a period after they got engaged where they regret it, where they tell themselves, what am I doing here? And then, if you don't catch yourself, then it keeps going into married life. I had a very good friend who told me that he went to his rabbi and he said to him, Rabbi, I'm married 3 years and I think I might have made a mistake. So the rabbi looks at him and says, I'm married 30 years and I think I might have made a mistake. He says, what do you mean? He said, that's a thought that can plague you your whole life if you don't nip it at the bud. If you're going to be willing to ask yourself that question, you're always going to be able to ask yourself that question. Marriage is filled with compromise. Every day in married life involves moments that you're a little annoyed, a little frustrated. I want to ask you a very simple question, and I don't know if you can conceptualize this for a minute. Okay, let's take the following scenario. Who wants the beginning pig here? Okay. Elio, we stop class now. And I tell the class, gentlemen, I want to take a 1 minute break. If you guys don't mind, give me 1 minute. I turn to Elio and I say, Elio, I made this 1 minute break because I wanted to make you a cup of tea. What tea would you like, Elio? I'm going to run down and get you a cup of tea. So Elio thinks for a minute. He says, any cup of tea? And I say, yeah, whatever you want. If I have to, I'll go to the store. I'll get you the cup of tea. So Elio goes, he thinks to himself, and he comes up with something convoluted. He says, you know what? I haven't had passion fruit tea mixed with ginger and chamomile in ages, and lemongrass, right? Ever since I left South America, I just haven't had it. So I tell him, just a second, Elio. And he's sitting there, and he looks at me, and I say, just a second. And then Yisrael says, Rabbi, can I just ask you a question? I say, sure. And I start talking to him, and the minute's up, and I say, sorry, got to continue class. Now, put yourself in Elio's shoes. Give me the level of disappointment you have that minute. How much disappointment do you have? You just offered me something. How come you didn't give it to me? How much disappointment do you have that minute? Let's take a much simpler example. We're on our way down, class is over, and I say, Yaakov, I'm gonna make myself a cup of coffee. Maybe I'll make you a cup of coffee too. You go, yeah, okay. I go down, I forget your cup of coffee. You come down to me and I'm sipping the cup of coffee and I just forget. And I look at you and I say, Yaakov, wasn't class great? Wasn't it? Yeah, good, great. You're sitting there and you're broiling inside. Aren't you enjoying that cup of coffee, Rabbi, right? Didn't you tell me you're gonna give me one? Right? Now, let's take the inverse for 1 second. What we're about to discuss is a tremendous concept in psychology, in the stock market, in a lot of areas of our life. Imagine for a second, I fulfilled my promise. I'm a decent guy. Elio, I went and I got you exactly the tea you got. On a scale of 1 to 100, how disappointed were you when I didn't give it to you? About 1,000. On a scale of 1 to 100, how happy are you when I give it to you?
A 2.
You see the difference? Same thing with your cup of coffee. On a scale of 1 to 100, how upset are you with me when I didn't give you that cup of coffee? 100. Okay, you're a decent guy, you're 90. Okay? But on a scale of 1 to 100, if I got you the cup of coffee, how good of friends are you? He's a nice guy. I still have to see what type. But you know, I'm not giving him all the grades yet. No way I'm giving him a 90 yet. We're going to see how annoying he is down the road. I'll give him a 20. He has to win his way up, right? That's the ratio of happiness, satisfaction to disappointment in everything. When you buy a stock and it goes up and you made $100, psychologists have proven your happiness is, like you said, a 2. But when you buy a stock and it goes down $30, you are disappointed, a 30, a 40, a 50. You're far more disappointed when things don't go the way you want than you are happy when things go the way you do want. That means within a marriage, your spouse is doing a lot of things that are great. But for every great thing that she does, she might get 1 point, maybe. But when she forgets to give that cup of coffee she just offered you, the phone rings, she answers it, she does a bunch of other things, you're broiling inside. Now there's a 30 against her, and all the wonderful things she's done. She did the laundry, she did the shopping, she did the cooking, she did the cleaning. After the shopping, she schlepped it from the car into the house. After she brought it into the house, she put it all in the fridge. She's been working for hours, but she forgot your one cup of coffee she just offered you, that's it. You're upset. Excuse me, wait a second, is that fair? So you ask the average husband, what does he say? Married life is tough. Married life is tough. I have to put up with all these things. What do you have to put up with, really? Come on. But it moves us. It's very real when it happens. It's very real. When there are these little disappointments, they are very real. And so people go through life being not only disappointed, people go through life feeling like, I married a lemon. My marriage is terrible. People go through life thinking, okay, I'm going to put up with her, maybe, for now. But how happy are people in their marriage? And people create their own disappointments. People create their own sorrow in their marriage. I see people who are married to saints. I see people who are married to the finest people I've ever seen. In both directions, both genders. And they're so upset with it. What are you so upset with? Because we're all that way. We are all that way. There's so much in a marriage that can frustrate us and annoy us. The first thing we have to decide in a marriage is, this is good, and I'm going to make it work. So the first challenge we have in a marriage is the question, did I make the right choice? Decide, after you decide to get engaged, decide, and then close it. You have to reach a point. You can say it's during engagement. You could say it's the morning after the wedding, the minute after you put the ring on her hand. But the second you're at the chuppah, it's over. You can't keep questioning, because if you're going to keep questioning, then that's a demon that's there your whole life. You have to decide, I'm not thinking about it. It's a done deal. Now we're going to make it work, and the question is how. And every marriage is difficult. There's no such thing as a marriage that's easy. Now, I just want to point out one very critical point. We are talking about, our class focuses on the day after you got married. Don't do what one wise Alec did in this class. He took all the concepts, and then he dated a girl that was problematic to the... she had real problems. And he told me stories from their dates, and I said, you know, this girl needs a lot of help. She's not ready to build a home. And he chose to ignore it. And then he married her. And then he was surprised that there were real problems. If a girl has a drug issue, I'm not saying don't marry her. I'm saying let her work on it. You don't want her taking crack when she's pregnant, right? So let her work on it. Don't tell me, Rabbi, you said every marriage is difficult. I'm just going to make it work. She's amazing. No, I didn't say that. I say... We have a series, we just did a series last semester. We have a series at the end of each year on dating. It's a totally different series. Do not confuse what we discuss here with our dating series. Our dating series is about how to develop a relationship during the dating period and to choose the right woman and get engaged her. We go from the first date, from before the first date, from deciding to date to the point of engagement. That's our dating series. Our class here begins the morning after you got engaged. Okay? It's not about how to choose the woman to get engaged to. Our class begins after you've chosen. You've chosen, you've gotten engaged, you've set a date for the wedding, it's for real, you've let everyone know, it's a done deal. Now you have to realize what's going to happen is you're going to have doubt, you're going to question your decision, you're going to have moments where you're going to say, I shouldn't have done this. So there has to be a decision. There has to be a point at which you say, that's it, I'm marrying this person, now let's make it work. But that's post, okay? That's not about how. Don't confuse this with pre-engagement. Pre-engagement, that's what you're checking out. If there's a problem, deal with the problem or realize this is not a person who it's recommended to get engaged to right now. This is not what our class is about. Our class is after you've gotten engaged. Okay, yes?
Can I have a quick question?
Depends if you're going to ask before engagement, so wait. We can discuss a little bit later, as in about 9 months. Or in a one-on-one.
It's a quick, I think you could answer. Let's say there is a question, okay, but, that needs to be worked out, less than drugs or more than drugs, whatever it is. If you could clearly see signs and steps have been taken in that direction of fixing it.
But still then a one-on-one. That's pre-engagement. Yes.
We never really actually finished. We did like two classes or something.
Right.
But we never actually really.
For the first time in about a decade, the guys voted not to finish the dating series last year. You'll have to go online and get the previous year's dating series.
I didn't vote.
That was the vote. I listened to the vote. What can I do? I had to go. It's true. Last semester, last year was the first time in many, many years that the guys voted after two classes on the dating series. We're not holding there. Skip it. So we skipped it. We stopped after two or three classes, right? But what can I do? If you guys will vote to have a dating series again, we can do it. But that's a different series. Okay. So enemy number one of marriage is the question, will this work? So there was a couple who came to one of the greatest rabbis of our time and said, we broke up, we were married, we decided we're separating, and now we think we're going to give it a shot again. What do you say? So the rabbi said, bad idea. So they said, Rabbi, you kept telling us we shouldn't get divorced. What do you mean, bad idea? So he said, you cannot get back together as an experiment. If you get back together and say, let's see if this works, then the answer is it won't work. Because every given day, you're going to have a million reasons why it didn't work. The only way marriage can work is if you get together and you say, "This, that's it, we're together. Take it as we're together." And then you let things ride. Part of marriage is you don't make a big deal of things. So I forgot your cup of coffee. You can forgive me. Move on. There'll be a cup of coffee tomorrow. So today I forgot. Nothing happened. Right? So marriage is about letting go. Not making an issue. Not keeping a tally, a scorecard. Being able to say, fine, let's move on. So that includes a lot of things. That includes the 2 minutes before you left for shul Friday afternoon where your wife says, you dunce, why didn't you take out the garbage? And you leave for shul thinking, I have to leave every Friday being called a dunce. Leave it, go to shul, daven, forget about it, come back with a smile and have a nice Friday night. Problems in marriage happen to a large degree because people are going to, they're not going to let go. They hold on to something. Let it ride. Not everything's a big deal. As a matter of fact, when we don't make a big deal of things, then many things are not a big deal. So that's a certain trait we have to acquire in ourselves. Right?
So your kid that falls, if you don't even look at him, they never grind.
But this is about us. This is, you have to realize. There's a saying that goes, when is a surgery minor? When it's someone else's. Once you're talking about me, come on, now it's serious. It's about me, don't you understand? It's about me. So that's what happens in a marriage. There's this big capital I. Excuse me. Take it easy, move on. Don't think about it. Okay. So now we're going to move on to the second point. There was a couple who was happily married, like every wonderful couple, and things were going nicely, and they had children, and then their children got married, and they started having grandchildren, and then one day, they had this great argument, and it spooed, and this argument went on for another day, and another day, and one day the husband got really upset, and so he sat down and wrote his wife a letter, and he was so hurt by her, that he wrote a line in that letter. And he said, he wrote this line and he said, sometimes you hurt so much, a person hurts so much, that they feel like they just can't go on with the situation as is. Now, he didn't spell it out. He didn't say, I'm considering divorce. He didn't say that. that he wrote a line that could have been understood that way. Okay, the way good marriages work, eventually they made up and marriage moved on. But there was a scar that was festering, because the woman, after all these years and all the things they had built together, after they had children and already had grandchildren, she was festering. How could he write me such a letter in which he's saying that he could be hurt to the point where he'll divorce me? I can't believe he wrote that. And it kept sitting in her. And 3 years later it erupted, and she said, I can't anymore. And their whole marriage fell to pieces. It took 3 years. But whatever he did couldn't fix that hurt that he had inflicted upon her when he insinuated that he's considering divorce. All the sweetness, all the gifts, all the good words he could say could not make up for the hurt he did when he insinuated divorce. We have to realize there is one piece of ammunition that never gets used in an argument in a marriage, and that is the word divorce. Never. It's not a bargaining chip. We don't threaten with it. We don't discuss it. In the United States, they have a rule. Don't threaten with a gun. You pull out a gun when you're ready to shoot. You don't pull out a gun and say, don't. Right? That you don't do. Why? Because they found many times that people had a burglar come to their house or other scenarios. They stood there with the gun, telling the guy not to shoot, and the guy understood how they could overpower the person, and they ended up taking the gun from them and shooting them. Right? So the rule in the United States is you don't pull out a gun until you're ready to shoot. A gun is not used for threatening. A gun is used for shooting. When you're ready to shoot the guy, pull out the gun and shoot. But don't stand there and threaten him. That will not work. Well, same idea as with the word divorce. You never threaten with divorce. You don't say you're considering divorce. There's nothing to talk about. It's don't worry. The idea is the amount of destruction that can be brought by the use of that word is a tsunami that often cannot be stopped. And this is something we've seen in both directions. We've seen marriages where the wife used the word and the husband finally lived up to what she said. We've seen marriages where the husband used the word and the wife suddenly surprised him. There's a couple I know that also, they had a horrible marriage for 20, 30 years. And he kept telling her, I'm going to divorce you. And one day he came home, found a notice on the front door. You're cordially invited to court. Now they're two fine people, him and her. But at some point she couldn't handle hearing this threat anymore, and it exploded in his face. And he regrets it, and he can't undo it now. So he's charging towards divorce, and he doesn't want it. And I've seen the flip side too, where a woman kept telling her husband, you're going to divorce me, we're going to end up in divorce. And then one day he had it, and they did. And she herself said later, she said, I brought this upon myself. I don't know how I got here. I'm living this miserable life, and I did it to myself. We don't use the word at home. And it's the one time when it's a good idea to actually react sternly. If your wife says a joke or says something that can sound like divorce, that's when you should stop and say, excuse me, please don't joke about it. Don't say that. I can't even hear that. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Very often for the first few years of marriage, people walk around with this feeling, I'm not going to instigate divorce, but if she asks for it, I won't mind. Right? They walk around with this feeling, this is really tough. You have to realize, A, any woman you marry, it's going to be tough. You see your neighbor, you see the guy who walks around all smiles with his wife and everything else. Believe me, my son just started high school. So they had a speech by one of the educators there, and he said to them, I want you to know there are 99 of you sitting in this classroom, and there are 99 of you who are really scared of starting high school. That every one of you is going to tell me, everyone around me has smiles on their face. He said, there are 99 people sitting here thinking everyone around them has smiles on their face and being scared inside of them. Right? Everyone thinks everyone else is happy and fine. It's the same thing with marriage. You look around and you think, oh, this guy has a good. They seem to be having a blast. Yeah, everyone else thinks you're having a blast too. It's not realistically, marriage involves work. Marriage involves hardship. And a person has to be very careful not to use that word. And if their spouse does say something to that effect, that's when you should react and say, please, don't even say that. The harsher you react, the more your wife sees that your relationship is meaningful to you. When you react harshly, what you're saying is, I can't bear to think of a life without you. It doesn't matter that right now we're in the middle of arguing. But you're a part of my life. That's a given. And please don't talk that way. That's when you should react harshly. What you're saying is, this is a given. Okay. Many years ago, over a decade ago, there was a group of guys here. We used to have our Friday class, was much shorter than our current Friday class. And every Friday we would learn another topic in halacha. And the guys would tell me one Friday they want to learn laws of tzitzit, so we did all the laws of tzitzit. One Friday laws of tefillin, we did all the laws of tefillin. Everything that's relevant to the average guy to know. And that's how it went. Every Friday they tell me what they want to learn the next week. Fine, but there were a class of real beginners. Right, we had guys there who we had two guys who came from homes that were completely reformed, and they both entered the Mahon declaring, "I will not be Orthodox. Just want to hear what you guys have to say." They both came to the Mahon with a declaration. They came from reform homes. They weren't going to change. They just wanted to hear what it was about. We had another guy in that class who had a non-Jewish girlfriend, and he said, "So long as I'm in the Mahon, I'm going to respect what you guys do. But when I leave, I'm going back to my..." So we respected that. We didn't... no fighting. So one day this class tells me, "We want next Friday, you should give us a class on the laws of Yichud." One of the laws in Halacha is that a Jewish man is not supposed to be alone with a Jewish woman where something inappropriate could happen. So it's not only you're not supposed to touch a girl, you're not supposed to be alone in a room with her where something could happen. So there are a lot of details to this Halacha. So I said, "Pick something else." So they go around the room. They said, "No, Rabbi, we want that." So I said, "Why?" Right? I said, "What's the point?" Right? I said, "We're not holding there yet. Let's learn about Shabbos. Let's learn about Kashrut, eating kosher. Why do you guys want that?" Remember, I'm sitting in front of guys where I know one has a non-Jewish girlfriend, etc. Why should we discuss that right now? We're not holding there yet. So they said to me, And it really taught me something. They said, "We want a class in the laws of Yichud because we want to know what we should be aspiring for. We want to know where we're supposed to go. Where are we supposed to be headed? We all know where we are. But you have to teach us what we're supposed to aspire to." I said, "Okay, I'm going to consult with Rav Listman," right? I said, I don't know. I don't want to disappoint you. A guy shouldn't walk around thinking I'm a sinner. You got to walk around knowing I'm doing this right and that right. And there are other things I still have to grow in." Fine, I listened to them. And some of them built beautiful homes. So sometimes in life, there are things which we have to be aware of, that we have to grow in that direction. Not everything we learn about, is it right for us to implement in our lives today. But it is something to think about. We do try to grow. And I want to throw something out there to you as a thought. Some of you might be holding where it's appropriate for you to adopt this now, and others have to think about it. Part of our identity is who our friends are. Who are your friends? Who are you? Who do you call when something special happens in your life? Who do you share your life with? It's part of your identity. Ask yourself as you go through your Facebook page, who's there? Who should be there? Who do I want to be there? One day you're going to get married. You want your wife to have all her ex-boyfriends on her Facebook page? Ask yourself, who are your friends? And friends not only in terms of who you hang out with, but who's hanging in with you, who's on top of every post you put on Facebook. And ask yourself where you want to get to with that. It's a thought, it's a direction. Again, don't be quick to make moves. And Mahon Meir, we definitely recommend slow growth. Don't be quick to jump in things, slowly. But it's something to think about. Think about who's in your life and who should be in your life. Let's recap what we discussed in our class on the Jewish home. Help me out, guys. What do we discuss?
Doubt.
Doubt. The idea that doubt is going to plague a person from the minute he gets engaged. What else did we discuss tonight?
Divorce. Never mentioned divorce.
Divorce. That's a word that should not come up in a Jewish home. What else did we discuss tonight?
Don't pull out the gun.
Don't pull out the gun.
If you're going to divorce, surprise her.
Right. What else did we discuss tonight? See, everyone takes something else from the class. It's very interesting.
Contribution in the society or in the world.
Again?
What would be the great contribution?
Right. What's your great contribution in this planet, in your life? Right. And we basically took your answers. We adapted them and dropped, but we took what you guys said. Right. Very good. Okay.